Blog Talk Radio.
And hello there. You're now listening to the Ben Solomon Show live on Blog Talk Radio. This show is going to be an interesting. I have the chat room open. It's not loading at my end, but okay, completely okay. I have an interesting topic. Sorry for if you notice some of the typos. I apologize for the typos. I get to correcting that. But anyway, let's get rolling. This chat room is now open. So if you're listening live, if you're on the episode page still and listening live on your computer on the episode page, to get into the chat room, you just have to reload the page. So ladies and gentlemen, the chat room is now open. Anyway, this is an interesting subject I want to be discussing here. I'm going to be talking about the show's title, The Truth About Islam, and this show is namely about radical Islam. To be honest, and it's going to be the relationship of to be clear, no, I'm not saying all Muslims are terrorists or hold radical Islamic views, nor am I saying that all practicing Muslims are terrorists or hold radical Muslim or hold radical Muslim views. I'm not saying any of that. So to recap, I'm not saying all Muslims or even all practicing Muslims are terrorists or hold radical Muslim views. Just to recap what I said there. So what I am going to be saying is that this idea that we get from the left that, oh, every religion has its equal share of religious fanatics is a myth. Or all religions are the same and they all come to the same point, the same message, and every religion has its share of religious fanatics. It's a multiculturalist myth. That is what I'm going to be saying. For instance, we don't see a global movement of Christian jihadists or Jewish jihadists in the name of a fanatical ideology, in contrast with the jihadist movement, which is exactly what we're seeing now. We see what happens is, as radical Muslims commit tens of thousands of terrorist attacks, and as they commit some of the most evil, heinous atrocities and do some of the most evil things to people that can, that any evil thing that bears to the human mind that you can do to a person, any horrific evil thing that comes to the human mind that can do to somebody, you see these radical Muslims literally carry it out. The Arab Muslim world is perhaps one of the, if not the most xenophobic places in the world. I mean, the fact is, this is politically incorrect to say, but Israel is a light in a region full of darkness. Israel is the only free country in that region. Israel is the only free country where minorities have equal rights, where women have equal rights, where Arab women can even vote, and where women are not seen as the property of their husbands. In contrast to the Muslim countries. And we see specifically that with Muslim immigration as well. I guess I'm going to be pulling out a can of worms at this. And look, I'm not saying all radical Muslim immigrants do this, but like you see, like specifically in Europe, when you have like unvetted Muslim immigration, of course, not all the Muslims coming to Europe hold these radical views, but a lot of them do. And those who do hold those radical views, many of them do, you know, try to impose it on others. With these no-go zones where the police are not allowed, with these mass rapes and these mass violence, and the police in those European countries do nothing because they're afraid of being called racist. For instance, in Rotherham, Britain, for instance, you see what happened was 1,400 11- to 14-year-old girls were molested and raped by Pakistani male gangs, and the police did nothing because they were afraid of being called racist. There was a social worker who basically, I think, tried to raise awareness about what was going on. She was told, oh, you need sensitivity training. You see, this is exactly the type of disastrous policies the left creates. And then you wonder why people like Donald Trump are rising. Donald Trump's rising because of political correctness gone too far. And this is one example of political correctness gone too far. You see that, like, when it comes to women's rights and gay rights, the left is completely and totally hypocritical. Completely and totally hypocritical. If you talk about the evil radical Muslims do, you get accused of being racist, being Islamophobic. You have the terrorist apologist Linda Sarsour, the darling who basically is beloved by these radical progressives and was named, I think, a champion of change by the previous disgraceful administration, by the Barack Obama administration. She even, you know, she said you can't be pro-Israel and be a feminist because Israel's oppressing the Palestinians and they're oppressing Palestinian women, supposedly, therefore you can't be pro-Israel and a feminist. And yet this is the same woman who goes around defending Saudi Arabia, where women are not allowed to drive, where women cannot leave the house without their male relatives. And she posted on Twitter, "Oh, you're worried about women not being able to drive? Well, they have 10 weeks maternity leave. They have 10 weeks maternity leave." So, you know, so according to, and look, and Sarsour in Arabic means cockroach, but, you know, I'm not going to go there. But, you know, the whole thing is, this is the type of hypocrisy, this lack of moral clarity, and this type of hypocrisy that we see. And with the left, it's your truth versus their truth. There is no your truth. There is no my truth. There is the truth. And the truth is Israel is the only place in the region that respects women's rights, where women, men and women have equal rights. And I think the Israeli ambassador responded on Twitter saying, well, women have 14 weeks maternity leave in Israel and they can drive. But see, this is what's going on. You see, in Saudi Arabia, women are seen as nothing more than the property of men. But, you know, she, of course, you know, is an apologist. I mean, she promotes Sharia law, and because she's really with the radical Muslims. That's the truth about Linda Sarsour. And, you know, and even though she defends some of the most misogynist regimes like the one in Saudi Arabia, specifically with that tweet, you know, about, oh, you know, women have maternity leave in Saudi Arabia, therefore they're all right when it comes to women's rights because they have maternity leave. You know, forget all the stonings, forget all the, you know, not allowing women to drive, forget all the women can't leave without their male relatives in Saudi Arabia. Forget all that. But they have maternity leave. They have maternity leave. Therefore, Saudi Arabia is the most. We should crown them as the most. You know, as the most feminist country in the world because they have maternity leave. Yay! I mean, you know, that's this whole thing. That's the whole thing. To get back on subject as well, also when it comes to radical Muslims, you know, the left likes to say, well, Christians are the same thing, but much of the atrocities that Christians did throughout history, I mean, I'm not saying all, much of them, was more so nationalistic than Buddhist fanatic. The thing is that, you know, the warlike aspects of Islam, the expansionism, the Dar al-Harb, House of War, non-Muslim world, and Dar al-Islam, House of Islam, House of Peace, you know, ideas of, like, you know, jihad against the infidels and all that stuff has been there since the beginning of the religion. I mean, let's just be honest here. And I understand there were other powers, you know, engaging in wars of conquest as well. And there are those on the left who are going to be saying, well, what about what the Bible says about Israel's conquest of Canaan? What about the language the Bible uses when it comes to driving at the seven Canaanite nations, to which, you know, even if, you know, I mean, leaving, and then, look, and I'm going to avoid the religious arguments, which is namely that the seven Canaanite nations were sinful, engaged in, like, human sacrifice, and had all that, and engaged in all that, and engaged in all sorts of sexual orgies as part of the, as part of its ritual worship, you know, that's what the Canaanite nations did, but leaving aside all that stuff, I'm going to avoid the religious arguments that are used to justify Israel's conquest of Canaan, or even the argument used by, like, in Rashi's commentary of Sefer Bereshit, the book of Genesis. Rashi, who is one of the most well-known commentators on Torah and Talmud, who basically explained that, like, you know, he gave a religious argument about Israel being Jewish, basically, like where he said, like, the reason why the I mean, Rashi in the Midrash, they said that the reason why, like, the reason why the Torah began not with the first commandment, the first mitzvah, but with, like, Bereishit Bara Elokim Shamayim Va'aretz, in the beginning God created heaven and the earth, was in order so then if the nations accuse Israel of stealing Canaanite land, Israel can say in response, God gave it to them and took it from them and gave it to us. Whoever he wants and give land, God can give, and take land from whoever he wants. But, you know, the point is, getting off of these tangents, I'm going to avoid those arguments. But what I will say is that even if you're a complete secularist, you don't believe in any of this, even if you're, well, not Jewish or a complete secularist and don't believe in any of this and think this is all nonsense, or even if you're a militant atheist and think that religion is all nonsense, here's something you cannot argue with. The Israelite conquest of Canaan was a one-time thing. There was no commandment from God unto Bnei Israel, the children of Israel, to launch wars of expansion, to create a caliphate, empire, and conquer the world. There was none of that within the Jewish religion. Israelite conquest, Judaism claims specifically the land of Israel, and the Israelite conquest of Canaan was a one-time event. Now, whether you believe in the religious justifications or not for Israel's conquest of Canaan, or, you know, and look, and I strongly believe Israel is Jewish, whether you believe in the religious Canaan or not, you know, you cannot argue with the fact that Israel's conquest of Canaan was a one-time event. It was not meant to be carried out to, to other parts of the world. Whereas with Islam, I mean, Islam did not claim a specific territorial region, and, you know, and you can see the same, and you see it also like, and though Christianity is a missionary religion, but it's not a religion of, like conquest, in any sense. And both Judaism and Christianity hold the Israelite conquest of Canaan to be a one-time thing. Islam, you know, it's, you know, with their wars, it's, you know, launching wars to expand to get more of the world under Dar al-Islam, the House of Islam, and that's the key difference. And that's why you see, if, let's say, Israel became a Jewish theocracy, Israel would not be an expansionist state. It would not be a threat to the world. But with a Muslim theocracy like Iran, you know, like Muslim theocracies would be a threat to the world. Specifically, especially if they include these warlike aspects from the Muslim faith. I mean, that's basically what I'm saying. But so you see, even though people on the right quote passages in the Quran that are troubling for the modern world, or that call for jihad and stuff like that, you know, and I mean jihadists do that to basically to say, you know, to support their position and to say, you know, we're fighting for true Islam, but, you know, when the right does that and the left says, well, you know, there are similar passages of the Bible that are also troubling from the modern perspective as well, like specifically when it comes and stuff like that. But I think the key difference is that one key difference is that there was no call within the Bible for, like, the children of Israel to expand and take over the world. Judaism claims specifically the land of Israel, and I mean specifically that. Both Christianity and Judaism, as I said, hold the Israelite conquest of Canaan to have been a one-time thing, whereas with Islam, you know those expansionist warlike aspects of Islam are still with us. Not every Muslim believes in them. Not even every practicing Muslim believes in them. When I say practicing Muslim, I mean like those who back from the date of Mecca or give zakat, the Islamic charity, or whatever. I mean, not every Muslim who does that believes in the warlike aspect of Islam. But what I am saying is political Islam is what I am talking about. And political Islam does include these warlike aspects of Islam, and the fact of the matter is that it's these, and we see that the reason why radical Islam is a threat today is because these warlike aspects of Islam are still with us today. that are being carried out by groups like the Muslim Brotherhood, like Al-Qaeda, like Hamas, like Hezbollah, like Daesh, i.e. ISIS, and others. And also, I want to address another point, as I was saying, you know, this idea that all religions call for the same thing at heart and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's not true. I mean, you look at specifically even the ancient days, and like Judaism was founded as also as a rejection of the pagan religions. It began with God telling Abraham, Lech Lecha, which means, which basically means go for you. It can mean go for, to you or go for you. And so it began with God telling Abraham, leave this land of paganism and go to the land that I will show you specifically. So it was, you know, a rejection of the pagan belief system. And you see the same thing here is that, I mean, look, not every religion has the same principles. Not every religion believes the same things. I mean, this idea that all religions say the same stuff and that you have an equal amount of fanaticism is not true. It just isn't. Like I said, Judaism was founded as a rejection of the back then, as, and we start with Abraham being told to leave. I mean, that's really what really started the I mean, that's what started God's covenant with the children of Israel. Abraham being the was the first patriarch, and the covenant began between God and Abraham. It was through Abraham, then his son Yitzhak, Isaac, then his son Yaakov, Jacob. And it started specifically with God telling Abraham, leave this land, leave your family, leave this land of idol worship, and go to the land that I will show you. Which is, you know, proof that, I think it's also evidence that, like, specifically when it came to Israel's conquest of Canaan, returning that Israel was also told to uproot the Canaanite culture, because in order to not, because there would be a snare to the children of Israel. I mean, that's what the Bible says. And so, you know, and so Judaism was found as rejection of the pagan religions. Unlike the pagan religions, Judaism believes in only one God, only one transcendent God, known as Hashem. And so that's an example of, you know, not all religions teach the same thing. Not all religions have the same thing at heart. That's a myth. And also, like, what's more, I think, relevant to this to the modern age topic at hand, as well, specifically, not every religion has an equal amount of religious fanatics. Leftists believe in equality of results. And they believe that, like, leftists believe that, leftists believe in equality of result, and leftists believe that everybody in every demographic group behaves the same way and acts the same way, and if you notice any difference, then somehow you're a racist or you're a bigot. I mean, people behave differently and stuff like that. You see the same thing, I think, as I said before with the so-called wage gap. There's no evidence of any business really, you know, paying 77 cents for every dollar a man makes. I mean, just for no other reason than that person is a woman. I mean, if it is true that, like, a woman and a man work the same hours and the woman only gets paid 77 cents for every dollar a man makes just because she's a woman, I would agree that's despicable, and I would agree that a boycott against that business would be in order if we can find the business doing that. But there hasn't been any business name doing that. Leftists, of course, is part of this equality result thing. They average out the wages and they say, well, because women seem to be making 70 cents less average, therefore women are making less than men. This is proof of sexism in the workplace. Because of this is proof of the discrimination there. But you see that, like, overall, I mean, and look, and there's always exceptions to different trends, but averages reflect the trends. And now is when you add a list of numbers then you divide by the amount of numbers that you add. For instance, if I say 3 plus 3 plus 3 equals 9, I added 3 plus 3 plus 3, and that equals 9. And then since I added 3 plus 3 plus 3, I added 3 times. And so it would be 9 divided by 3, and the average of that would be 3. I'm not sure I explained the most clear way. My language can sometimes not be that great when it comes to explaining this type of stuff. But the averages you add a certain amount of numbers, and by the amount of numbers you add or by the amount of times you divide by the amount of times you add. Like, because 3 plus 3 plus 3 equals 9, I added 3 times 3 plus 3 plus 3. There was 3. I mean, it's effectively the same number, but it's 3 times that I added that number. Because 3 plus 3 plus 3 equals 9, 3 times, three times. And divided by 3 is a 3, yeah. So the point is, I may not be explaining it in the most clear way, but the point is, you know, the average reflects the trends. Of course, there are exceptions, but overall, men tend to choose jobs that are men tend to choose jobs that are, it's not to say there's not exceptions to this trend, but men tend to choose jobs that involve them working longer hours, and that, of course, involve more pay. That's not to say that women's choices are inferior, but that is to say that men and women overall make different choices, and of course, there's exceptions. You can find plenty of exceptions, but the average reflects the trends more than the exceptions. What I'm saying is an example of the left believing inequality result, and this idea that people always make the same choices, and the equal amount of people from each demographic group makes the same choices, and you know it's not true. That's just not true. And you see, it's the same thing also with this idea that every religion has an equal amount of religious fanatics. Every religion. And yes, there are religious fanatics among Christians, among Jews. But the key difference is that you don't see you see that Islam has a much bigger problem with religious fanaticism because, again, as I said, you know, yes, you see these hateful fringe groups like the Westboro Baptist Church, which hold up signs like that say stuff like God hates fags, in front of U.S. military funerals, and then no doubt they cause a lot of grief to the families of soldiers and their friends who mourn their deaths. You know, after the soldiers risked their lives bringing freedom and defending this great country, America. I mean, no doubt they do cause a lot of grief in their protests and stuff like that, but you cannot say that, as hateful as the Westboro Baptist Church protests are, and they really are hateful, you cannot say that somehow that is the moral equivalent of tens of thousands of terrorist attacks, fanatical jihadists. You can't say that. And, you know, these are facts. Like I said, you don't see a global movement of Christians strapping bombs on themselves and blowing people up. You don't see a global movement of Jews doing it either. There's always conflict when the Muslim world borders a non-Muslim world. It tends to always be conflict. Israel, Palestine, India, Pakistan, on and on and on and on and on. And there comes this the idea also that the left basically wants and you see this specifically in Europe. This is why Europe's getting destroyed, because the left-wing elites there want to blame everything but the radical Muslims. When radical Muslims there start attacking Jews, they blamed Israel and its fictitious occupation of Palestine. When they attacked the majority of European population, they, you know, tried to sweep it under the rug and say anybody who reports on that problem is a racist. But you know, and then the seemed that like, and then when the European nationalist parties rose up, some of them xenophobic, you know, started to address those problems. The non-racist people who get falsely accused of racism, that you know, say, well, hey, the only people addressing those problems. That's largely why you see some of these like far-right populist parties in Europe are rising up, because largely because of this. Largely because of this. Also, to get back to the average thing, I found a better way to explain it, the whole wage gap thing, because, I mean, when I said 3 plus 3 plus 3 equals 9 and 9 divided by 3 is 3, I mean, what happened with that number was being added 3 times. I think it might be a better way of explaining it, but anyway, moving on from that, I think you get my point. The thing is, as I said, look at what's happening in Europe. This political correctness is destroying Europe. And you see that it's, and you see specifically, you have, and I think this political correctness run amok, as I said, and I'm going to sound very redundant, but it's also what largely, there's political correctness being, being gay extreme is also, what, as I said, what largely caused Donald Trump to be president. And specifically, this is one issue that reflects the left's hypocrisy when it comes to women's rights and gay rights. Because you see, and you see specifically, like, you know, there was also this, I got to upload this file, but there was also, like, there was also a good report by Millie Weaver, who is, and she went to the Women's March. And right when many of the women there were dressing in the hijab and stuff like that to show identification with the Muslim world, and look, and I support the right, and I support the right of Muslim women to wear the hijab if they choose to do so. I mean, because my position on that is, I mean, the hijab and the niqab are used, women are forced to wear the hijab and the niqab in the Muslim world, and they're used to oppress women in the Muslim world. However, in the West, some Muslim women do choose to wear it, like for religious reasons in particular, and if they choose to wear it, they should be able to wear it. That's my view on it. But Millie Weaver, report for InfoWars, and yes, and InfoWars is a conspiracy theory site, so no, I'm not promoting them, but I do think that Millie Weaver is a good journalist. Millie Weaver went to the went to one of these women's march demonstrations, and she, you know, right when many of the women there were dressing in the hijab to identify with the Muslim world, and she pointed out that in countries like Saudi Arabia, women are forced to wear that, women are oppressed there, saying those facts, and then plenty of the women at the women's march got triggered, not by those facts, but by her saying those facts, and someone actually tried to grab the mic from her. Because she dared to, you know, say those facts. You know, those harpies, basically, I mean, the Women's March includes some of the dumbest harpies ever. Those harpies who were like, Donald Trump insulted women, Donald Trump insulted women. You know, these are the same harpies who are like working with radical Muslims who want to strip away women's rights. You know what I mean? And yes, I agree, Donald Trump insulting, I agree. Donald Trump has been a jerk to women and to men as well. I agree about that. I'm not going to argue that I'm not going to say he wasn't a trashy guy, because at times he was a trashy guy. But that's peanuts, absolute peanuts, compared to what happens in countries like Iran and Saudi Arabia. Peanuts. The Women's March was organized by totalitarian Marxists, far leftists, such as totalitarian Marxists, by Palestinian terrorists, and by radical Muslims. Like, see, Linda Sarsour was among those who organized Women's March, who's basically, you know, I mean, look, and And you know, and by simply the Sarsour's logic, Trump should also be all right when it comes to women's rights because, you know, because he supports maternity leave. He supports maternity leave. But no, it's like, you know, Saudi Arabia has 10-week maternity leave, therefore, they're suddenly, therefore, you know, forget about Saudi Arabia where women are seen as property of men. Forget about where, you know, where they believe, in essence, that women who basically drive or asking to be raped pretty much. I mean, plenty of them do believe. I mean, the Saudi regime does believe that, and there are plenty of people who believe that, and that's the dominant attitude over there. I'm not saying everybody over there believes that, but that is the dominant attitude over there. Women who are, you know, driving are essentially asking to be raped. I think there was a Saudi minister, like a Saudi historian, who basically one time even said that. But forget about all that. They have 10 weeks maternity leave. I mean, even though I don't even think there is a lot of women who work in Saudi Arabia, to be honest, because it's seen as the property of men, pretty much. But you see that. You see the heartbeat of the Women's March, and, you know, watching some of the videos, some of the men go there because they think, oh, yeah, I'm defending women. I want to be seen as someone who is pro-women and defending women. Look, to all the men out there who think that, you're not defending a woman when you go there. You're going to a Harpies march of, like, you know, clueless idiots wearing vagina hats. I mean, that's what you went to. If you're one of those men who went to the Women's March because you think, oh, you're going to show how you're pro-women to everybody, you know, you're not. You're not. You went to a march full of dumb Harpies wearing these vagina hats. You went to a march that, in essence, actually supports some of the most vile misogyny in the world, you know, coming from the Muslim world. He went to a march organized by terrorists. The March 8th Women's March was organized. One of the organizers was a PFLP terrorist who took part in terrorism against Israel. And in fact, you know, and this PFLP terrorist, Ramzi, what's her name? I mean, this PFLP terrorist, she basically claimed that, she just confessed it because she was supposedly tortured by Israel, which is complete BS. The thing of the matter is, I think there was someone else she took part in, like, terrorism against Israeli students and in the Jerusalem super, you know, she took part in a terrorist attack in the Jerusalem supermarket in 1969. I think it was two terrorist attacks, and I think the Jerusalem supermarket, and I think that one of her accomplices in the Jerusalem market terrorist attack listed this PFLP terrorist as her accomplice on Palestinian TV when she was bragging about it. When I think this PFLP terrorist was bragging about it, I think it was a she. You know, she listed this PFLP terrorist who became an organizer of the Women's March as an accomplice. I think it's this Ramsey, I think it starts with an O, her last name. That was the March 8th march. That was the That was Ramzia Oda, I think it's her name. Ramzia Oda was her name. She was a PFLP terrorist who took part in two terrorist attacks, one of them in the Jerusalem supermarket in 1969. And when it came to the Jerusalem supermarket terrorist attack, her accomplice went on Palestinian TV and listed Ramzia Oda as her accomplice. When she was bragging about on Palestinian TV, and, you know, and Palestinian Media Watch actually, which monitors, like, Palestinian TV and Palestinian media, actually, you know, actually has a clip of that. But to get back on the point, you know, the march, you know, as I said, shown also by, you know, when Millie Weaver never said, oh, if I go to the Women's March and point out the fact that women in Saudi Arabia are oppressed and are forced to wear the hijab, and stuff like that, that then people are going to be upset at me, and one of those dumb dumbs are going to try to take away my mic. Well, if I say that over there, she never just said that would happen if I do that. No, Millie Weaver actually went there you know, said those, said, point out the fact that women in Saudi Arabia are oppressed, and that they don't have, and that they're forced to wear the hijab in Saudi Arabia, and you know, and the dumb harpies there were upset because she dared to say those facts. They were upset at her for saying those facts, and one of the dumb dumbs tried to grab her mic. And so, you know, and so, again, it's proof that, you know, the Women's March was not at all a march against female genital mutilation that happens in the Muslim world, or against, you know, the oppression women deal with in the Muslim world. Not at all. So it's not at all a pro-women march. It's a far-leftist march. Say, oh, we're pro-women, we're pro-women, you know, and they would not even allow pro-life feminists into the march. They would not allow pro-life women into the march, but they would allow Islamists like Linda Sarsour, who defends Saudi Arabia, to be one of the organizers there, which is just, as I said, complete and utter hypocrisy. Complete and utter hypocrisy. But specifically when it came to, like, one of the terrorists who tried to, who just so happened to have dark skin, was one time he tried to go out and execute Pamela Geller, leader of the I think defense for American defense against the American defense of freedom against Sharia or something like that. I forgot the name of the organization. It left my head. The American Freedom Defense Initiative. I mean, so, you know, Pamela Geller is president of the American Freedom Defense Initiative. There was this one terrorist who happened to have dark skin and set out to execute Pamela Geller, who leader of the American Freedom Defense Initiative, who also hosted these famous John Muhammad cartoons in order to, you know, because these, and look, and those John Muhammad events are a response to radical Muslims rioting in response to cartoons of Muhammad, and then the left trying to censor that in order to appease radical Muslims, and the left blaming not the radical Muslims, but those who draw Muhammad. And so this one terrorist, who happened to have dark skin, tried to execute Pamela Geller, and then he was, I think, stopped by the police, and then when he was interrogated by the police, he then, I think, grabbed a sword, and then, or I think a knife it was, and then tried to, and went after the policemen who were interrogating him, and the police shot him in self-defense. Now Linda Sarsour said, "Oh, this is another incident of the police shooting someone in cold blood because that person's black. It's another racial incident of the police shooting an innocent black Muslim who was just going to work. He was just going to work, and the police stopped him and shot him."
Yeah, he went just going to work, all right, executing Pamela Geller.
And that's the point. Maybe I'm just sort of going back and forth, but I think these are just examples of what I'm talking about, as I said. I think I pretty much covered most of the things, but I have, I think, a little more than 11 minutes left, so I'm going to try to conclude this show and wing it within that time frame, because I want to, and also, yeah. But
What else am I trying to get my thoughts out? So, again, what I want to reaffirm is that also, well, here's another thing I was going to say. Also, when the UN made that outrageous decision also to include Saudi Arabia as a member of the Women's Rights Commission over there, and the UN voted to include Saudi Arabia as a member of the Women's Rights Commission, you know, the same Saudi Arabia where women have no rights and are seen as property of men. Also, I want to say there was no women's march against that. You didn't see any of the harpies and vagina hats protesting against that, which is a real insult against women's rights. Plenty of those harpies, you know, at the women's march were saying, oh, Donald Trump's going to take away our rights. So he's going to take away our rights. When it comes to a country where women are pretty much have no rights, pretty much, and are seen as the property of men, then, you know, then, of course, you know, complete silence. Because, you know, it's this whole thing, you know, it's not really about women's rights or gay rights or anything like that. This whole thing that the left looks at, I mean, the left basically looks at the world in a Marxist-like setting. The left looks at it where it's, you know, it's, you know, like the white men are purely evil. They're the privileged evil bastards. And it's everybody else are somehow victims. And it's like, you know, a status of victim. It's like a pyramid of victimology. Whoever gets the biggest victim points are basically get the most status, meaning they get to say whatever they want and are above criticism unless they spout conservative views, then that's the exception when you can go after them. And, I mean, that's the bottom line. And that's why you see leftists don't condemn human rights violations against women in the Muslim world, nor do they condemn radical Islamic atrocities against women. Nor would you see them really condemning honor killings. I mean, these leftists try to say, oh, Muhammad was a feminist and stuff like that. But, you know, and stuff like that, but when it comes to America and the West, you see these third wave SAW feminist snowflakes, SAW being social justice warriors, you see in the America and the West these SAW radical feminist snowflakes, you know, cry sexism over a man spreading his legs on the bus or the subway. And they cry sexism over being a bit chilly in the office. Oh, it's the sexist air conditionings. It's those sexist air conditionings. Oh, the words, I think some of them said, oh, the word too is sexist. The word too is sexist. You know, stuff like that. And, you know, it's just proof that, like, you know, see, places in the world where women really are being persecuted, specifically in countries where the religion of peace is the dominant religion, and like Saudi Arabia and Iran, for instance, and you see this basically this. Yeah, specifically Saudi Arabia and Iran, and you basically see this. And coming from these radical feminists who basically, you know, who basically came out with the fake wage gap, which I explained earlier. I may not have done a good job explaining the average thing, but hopefully you understand. And I think it was pretty clear, but, well, whatever. And also, we can't come out with this idea that men who spread their legs in the subway or buses are, oh, that's manspreading. Women are a little cold. Oh, that's sexist air conditionings. And, you know, and these, of course, same radical feminist harpies, of course, you know, are silent when it comes to the oppression against women in the Muslim and Arab world, particularly in Iran and Saudi Arabia, when it comes to the oppression of women in third world countries, when it comes to, like, female genital mutilation in third world countries, when it comes to the oppression women deal with in third world countries, and all that other good stuff, you know, the tendency by these far leftists is, oh, that's their culture, that's their way of life. Why are you to impose your morals on them? Like in one breath they say that for women's rights, and a man is sexist, even and a white male chauvinist, so you know, and a white male so-called chauvinist has even sexist if he spreads his legs in the subway, because when a white man spreads his legs in the subway in the bus, it's really him asserting his privilege. And even if he doesn't know he's asserting his privilege, he's subconsciously asserting his privilege. You know, that's basically what they say. But what I was also, what here was I was going to say, what I was going to say is the fact that people, the fact that you have these radicals, I mean, of course, these radical feminists don't represent most women, because, I mean, ever since feminism started being hijacked by Marxism, it's gone more and more and more extreme over the years. More and more and more women have been leaving feminism. So this toxic, like the third wave feminism and radical SJW feminism and all that other good stuff does not represent the sentiments of most women. Because in fact, the feminism becoming more extreme like this has caused more women to leave feminism. And I'm not talking about everybody who calls themselves feminist, you know, or what I am talking about is, I mean, the mainstream of the feminist movement is the extreme feminism movement. It's the mainstream of the feminist movement. There's no, I mean, there may be some feminists who are against it. Third wave feminism and the more extreme brands of feminism, but there's not really a real movement within feminism trying to counter that. Not really a significant movement within feminism trying to counter that is what I mean to say. But the fact that these harpies, I mean, basically are able to, you know, like lament about men spreading their legs on the subway, on the buses, and lament about being called into office and saying how all that sexism, the fact that these harpies, not most women, of course, but these harpies are able to lament about that is proof, I would say, that there is equality between men and women in America and the West. Not to say everything's perfect. I mean, there's still imperfections, but overall, there's equality between men and women in the West, and overall, and I would say it's proof that women have it good in America and the West. If you have these harpies are able to lament about sexist air conditionings and men spraying their legs on subways and buses, they're able to lament about or mansplaining, you know, when a man may explain something to them or interrupt them or whatever. And look, and you know, I sometimes have a bad habit of interrupting people sometimes. And look, and everybody interrupts and interrupt everybody at certain times and stuff like that. Women interrupt men, men interrupt women, women interrupt each other, men interrupt each other. What I'm saying, but the point, to sum up what I'm trying to say, the point is the fact that these harpies are able to lament about sexist air conditionings, mansplaining, men spraying their legs on buses and subways is proof that women have it good in America and the West. That's what I mean to say. That's what I mean to say. The countries in Saudi Arabia and Iran where women get stoned for looking at men who are not their husbands, where women are seen as the property of men. In countries in these Muslim countries where you see like women are treated as worse than cattle, they're seen as merely property. And there's lots of honor killings, and many women who even get raped end up, you know, like since they're seen as no longer virgins, even though they were raped, they get killed in honor killings to preserve the honor of the family. You know, I mean, that's what happens in the Arab Muslim world. So it's lucky that, like, you know, that there is such equality in America and the West overall, a very small voice, get to complain about men spraying their legs, men sexist air conditionings and all that other and all these other first world inconveniences. And look, and when I go on the subway, I have to squish myself through. So this whole idea that this is a whole gender issue, and you know, and it's always men taking up more space and whatever. Oh, I mean, first of all, men need to take up a little more space to make up for the testicles as well. But leaving that aside, this whole idea that only women are ever squished on the subway and on buses, you know, I mean, look, as a man, I can tell you that is complete BS. And yes, it's annoying, but it's a first world problem is what I have to say. It's an annoyance. It's an annoyance, but a first world problem. That's what I have to say. I mean, being squished in the subway and buses, which affects both men and women alike, is an annoyance, but a first world problem. Anyway, I believe the show is over, so God bless Israel, God bless America, God bless if you will, take care and bye.